I believe there are two ways to approach our lives. One is looking at it as a series of norms we have to live into and objectives we have to achieve. This view is full of expectations, pressures, bias, and systemic dynamics that continuously need to be overcome. The other is to look at life as a series of choices we make and goals we set for ourselves, a life that is full of agency, growth, and opportunity. Welcome to Live Stoked and Lead Stoked, where we explore both life and work from that latter perspective. I'm your host, Sarah Bettman, coach, consultant, and speaker. More importantly, I'm a fellow traveler on the path towards living my own stoked life, and I'm passionate about helping others do the same. Let's jump into this exploration of life and work and what it means to live and lead stoked. Hi, everyone. It's great to have you on the Live Stoked, Lead Stoked podcast. I'm terribly excited for today's guest because it is technically the first family member you're going to hear. I've recorded the Mets, but we're going to go back to the drawing board on that one. Who we have, to me, she's Jessie Pappalardo, but to the world, she's Jessica Ames, and she is my cousin and is doing some really, really cool stuff in the Chicagoland area that actually now has expanded almost globally. We'll see how it goes, but it's very exciting. So I'm going to try to call you Jessica, Jessie, Jay, whatever. Welcome. So glad you're here.
Jessie is fine, cousin Sarah. I am so stoked to be here. That the nerdiest thing that you've heard today. I am, though. Actually, stoked is one of my favorite words to use for an energetic, you know, just kind of like I'm pumped. So I love that that's your guiding, I don't know, just concept for the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I was just talking to someone who wants to get into doing what I've doing. And I'm like, I just use the word all the time. That's how I came up with it. It wasn't branding. It wasn't some marketer. I was just working with a client in the South, and I keep joking, I'm bringing Stoke to the South. And one of the members of the leadership team's like, no, you're not. Two of the leaders going around the circle, they want stoked employees. So I don't know. It's 2-1 here. But anyway, so we're going to start with the question I ask everyone. Because Live Stoked is living a life despite roles and identities put upon you and living a life of choice and agency. That is really the premise of this podcast. And it means something for different. And it stoked is that excitement, but it is that also solid grounded, especially when it gets hard, like I'm doing this, I chose this, it's awesome. So what does living stoked mean to you?
Well, I have to say, I knew you're going to ask this question because I've been listening to the podcast. So I've been thinking very deeply about it. And as simple as it is, I guess for me, the idea is just to have a good time. I kind of wake up every day hoping to learn something new and just enjoy myself, enjoy meeting new people, hanging out with my kids, you know, working on my business. So it's sort of, I guess, Live Stoked for me is just to find a way to have a good time, no matter where you are or what's going on around you. And I know, you know, I would accuse myself even sometimes of being sort of like having toxic optimism, but I also think a lot about that. And I do feel like joy as a form of resistance and resilience is pretty powerful as well. And you can see that in, you know, in people who are dealing with really difficult, dire situations as well, which we always have to remember. But just approaching it with, you know, the outlook that today is a day that I get to sort of have a choice about how I look at it and enjoying a good laugh with people who I love. I think that's what I'm, you know, think of as living stoked.
Awesome. And I have to say, we have some pretty awesome cousins. So Jessie's on the mom side, even on my dad's side. I'm pretty honored to be amongst this group of cousins. There's some awesome stuff going on. And I would say you, at an early age, was living this. Like you have made choices that kind of, I remember your mom and aunts kind of like, okay, where's Jessie going with this? And what I love so much about, you know, having seen you literally grow up, because I'm a wee bit older, but we won't talk how much, it's been consistent. It wasn't a thing in high school or a thing in college or a thing. It is who you are. And that authenticity piece is, you seem to have gotten the memo way earlier than I did. So I would love for you to tell a little bit of your story of how you came to be here. Some of the things, I don't want to air it out because I want you to tell it as part of your story. Some of the things you did that was counter to what your peers were doing that I think really is the foundation for what you're doing now.
Ooh, I'm curious what you mean by all of that. But I don't know. You know, I think I think this joy for life and curiosity, it really is rooted in curiosity. And I've learned that from my mother, who has always approached everything with just a wholehearted curiosity. And I think, you know, I mean, so much of how I ended up here is due to family, my parents, you know, my cousins, and, you know, people who have been close to me. So I just sort of feed off of the people around me, and I kind of take things as they come. So my journey has brought me here because, you know, early on, my mom, she always was creating, and she would always be turning those things into businesses. And so at a very young age, that's what I thought you did. Just, ooh, you know, she would have like these fashion lines that she would start by, you know, painting on leather belts. And then that was sort of a little business that she did. And so then I started doing, you know, cutting up clothing. And then that was kind of like this fashion phase that I went through, and spray painting on shirts. And people would buy the shirts from me at festivals and stuff. I haven't thought about that for a long time. But yeah, I think I learned that throughout life, just kind of observing her and her curiosity for life.
Yeah, I didn't know about the t-shirt, but I still have my painted belt. I actually wear it with my ski pants and feel quite cool because, yes, you know, having a cool belt with your ski pants is always part of it. As you listeners are quickly learning, I'm anything but cool, and especially in comparison with some of the people, especially as it relates to fashion. I didn't know about the t-shirts. I was actually, and I'm butcher the name. I was thinking your first entrepreneurial thing was Meyer House or Meyer House or, yeah, you know, that
Meyer House.
Meyer House.
It makes no sense. But yeah, I was in art school at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And again, I was surrounded by really wildly interesting, you know, a bizarro group of friends. And we ended up starting this arts incubator, I guess you could call it, / party, you know, sort of situation. And we threw events 2 times a week for about 8 months. It was less than a year, this kind of wild thing, but the name was really fun. It kind of, it came about naturally, and it means my, your, and our. And we just sort of put them all into one big word. And the idea was that we were building this thing for one another, and that there, you know, you could be an individual within the community, but it was really sort of community driven. And we did wild events. They were all very much rooted in performance art, music, fashion. They were all themed. So we would have some, you know, weird mashup theme, and then everybody would create these amazing costumes based on the theme and show up. That was really a fun, wild time. And it was at the very end of my art school experience. So it was pretty fitting.
Well, and this could be me projecting, because I was definitely in my formal adult phase at that time. I feel like I'm like not growing up, I'm growing younger or something as I let go of all these roles. But, you know, you just would pick a house, a space, a place, and then you'd do this. It felt like, and then you did this event and there were posters everywhere, and it felt terribly illegal and dangerous and hard. And like just even me saying that just shows how many boundaries I have had to overcome in my own thinking about getting stuff done that actually has kept me from doing some cool things that I want to do. It's kind of like, yeah, but what about this? What about that? And then I, you know, by the time the idea is time to execute on it, I've lost energy for it. Where you just got shit done. And I think this is really important because it relates to what you're doing now, but I would love for you to talk about that. You had a certain element of gumption that terrified me back then when I was a grown up. But now I have just complete appreciation for it as I'm not a grown up. Yeah. Like, how did you do it?
Like, why did I do it, really?
Well, why? Yeah.
How did we do it? What were we thinking? You know, I think part of it is that we weren't thinking. We were just sort of living and responding to our environment. And, you know, at the time I was living with friends, again, some of them going to the School of Art Institute with me and some not. And we lived in this neighborhood called Pilsen in Chicago, which has changed a lot since then, but is an immigrant neighborhood. It's a Mexican neighborhood, really amazing. We were just surrounded by young people who grew up in the neighborhood and who were making art and music that was like none other. And it was kind of this, you know, just storm of creativity. And so all of us, we sort of banded together and celebrated it in our own way. And I think part of the reason why we, you know, kind of looked, I don't know. I mean, there was an element of risk involved, but you know, other people were throwing parties and stuff like that at the time as well. And we felt really emboldened and empowered by things we were learning at the time. Like I was taking a class at the Art Institute that was all about Bronzeville, which is a neighborhood in Chicago that is rooted in African-American Black history and that has a culture of events, music, art. And so I was learning about the history of Bronzeville and, you know, living in Pilsen at the time and, you know, just kind of immersed in that culture, that underground music scene and everything. And then, you know, we met people across both neighborhoods and we started to collaborate. And then we started having these events and people came from all over the city to celebrate all of these cultures. And then, you know, there was a big contingent of, you know, queer folks who came and just were, you know, kind of putting their own stamp on this whole scene. And it just snowballed into this thing that felt important and exciting. And so we sort of forgot that we weren't supposed to be doing some of these things. And we got a lot of leeway, you know, we were lucky. I think people who came were really respectful. And just wrapped up in this kind of, it felt like a, you know, a euphoria kind of moment, but it was short lived. It was less than a year. So it didn't last that long, but it did inform, I think, the rest of my life. I literally built a career on intercultural events and arts programming from then on. And so it had a huge impact on me, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, okay, it was only a year, but you were doing 2 a week. I mean, that's a lifetime of stuff. And so, yeah, paint a picture for us or build the bridge of that Jesse to who you are today and how you came to be here. And whether you want to share it in this question or in the next one, I think what you're doing right now is incredibly cool.
Oh, thanks. I'm, again, just really inspired by the people around me. This is like, I'm a broken record. But what I'm doing right now, so I guess, you know, from those days in college, I ended up creating a, you know, just kind of building a career off of this compulsive event planning and programming thing that was just sort of part of my soul at that point. And so later on, I kind of was in Iowa for a bit and I collaborated with Chef Gabby Weir and we were doing these like clandestine Epicurean culinary experiences that were rooted in celebration of Iowa and small farming. And then people within our community that were also international. So we had, you know, events that were celebrating Turkish food with a friend Zeynep who wanted to talk about her, you know, the food of her mother's culture. And then we did a Peruvian dinner with Karina, who was also, you know, just wanting to celebrate food from her culture. And then we did Italian wine stuff. I mean, we just were just doing all these things in different places. So that, you know, that kind of brought in culinary and hospitality, more of a, you know, legitimate kind of hospitality side to my experience. And then I ended up actually going to Shanghai, China. And I'm crazy. I don't know. I'm, you know, this is, again, I blame my mother, but for 6 months, I kind of planned, okay, what is this big move going to be? I was going to stay with my best friend from college, Katia Lee in Shanghai, because I needed a bigger city than Iowa City. And she said, Shanghai's big, you know, like, why don't you come here? So I did my research and I decided, okay, I'm going to bring this green coffee drink that was pretty popular in Iowa City at the time to China because they were having this big coffee kind of explosion. And, you know, primarily tea drinking culture, it was sort of a lot of people were kind of having issues with coffee's flavor. And so I was like, hey, we could bring this green coffee drink to China and it will be huge. It'll be like a, you know, a huge business. And Katia was down for it. And so I went and I was in China for 4 months and I actually ended up working on an intercultural event program there, which just because she sort of match made. So I had an amazing experience there, but I actually ended up coming back for love. So my now husband had just returned back from the Peace Corps in South Africa right before I went to China. And even though I had all these huge aspirations for China and, you know, green coffee empires, I came back because I loved my husband. I do, you know, I still do.
We all love your husband. So he's a good one.
That was sort of a journey cut short, but in, you know, to make space for other things in life. But years later, I actually went back to China, to this time Yunnan, China, with Kat and a group of people from the U.S. here. We created a tour to explore Shangri-La, which is sort of a rebranding of this town at the base of the foothills of the Himalayas. And so we took a group of people from here out there as sort of another, hey, let's see, you know, go be on events and do tours. And that was super fun and special. But that actually was happening at the same time that I kind of legitimized my career in public arts programming. And so that was sort of a side project at the time. But the pandemic sort of halted all the big events programming and public arts programming things that I was doing here in Chicago with the Chicago Park District, and then with a partner based out of New York, bringing Lawrence Wiener's public art pieces to Chicago. So I had more time to think. It was like 2020 just stopped everything, and I had a moment to think about what was important to me in life and, you know, make some choices about the next direction.
And tell us what you're doing now.
So right now, born out of that moment in life, my company is called International Cafe. It's a movement of people who are interested and engaged in cultural exchange through language exchange. But that sounds very academic. It's really the branding and everything is all about, you know, kind of these fun loving. It's like big lip logo. I guess you can see it here, but for listeners, it's a big mouth talking, speaking a bunch of different languages. It's a community that actually started here in Chicago in 2017. I took over about a year and a half ago and have grown it to now 5 cities across the U.S. We host right now, our focus is in real life language cafe or intercambio style events, which involve all languages. Each language gets a table and you go to the table with the language that you want to be immersed in for the evening for about 3 hours. Yeah, we have a huge following here in Chicago. We've just sort of, we have budding followings happening in cities across the U.S. And next month we should be launching in Canada. So I guess we're officially international, which is sort of silly, but also very, very, very exciting.
And what have been some of the surprises that have come out? I know you shared some, so if you don't share them, I want to share them because I think they're novel. But, you know, what has surprised you in doing this?
Oh, well, actually, you know, the journey's been really interesting because when I initially conceived of this, you know, idea that I wanted to just really go on my own and try something, the concept was more about international immersion through travel. But as, you know, I talked about it and built it from my basement, people would say, hey, you should check this out. You should check that out. And that's actually how I came across the Language Cafe model, which really stole my heart and instigated this shift over to in real life, regular immersion with people who live in the same city where you're in. And so I don't know actually the direction that it will go from here completely, but I feel like it surprised me how much the journey has sort of exposed, you know, what it really is instead of what I thought it was originally.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I suppose I was getting more to the event details and that you have people bringing in languages you've never heard of. You have found people that are really fighting to maintain languages that are at risk of going away, you know, and who sits at what tables has also been surprising. So I suppose because of all that, you know, tell us about what a night of the International Cafe would be like, because I'd rather hear it from you than my outside observation. But I'll tell you, listeners, if you look at social media, like, I'm so jealous. I don't speak any language. And I know, Jesse, you have an answer for this. I do. And I could do really bad Spanish. And I really want to go. So anyway, talk about a night event. And yeah, some of those more detailed personal surprises that I think have added depth to the meaningfulness of what you're doing, that even as you talk about it, it's like, wow, that's way cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's so many surprises and little things. So originally when I took over the series, you know, it was all about flags, right? You know, international flags just at different tables. So the format is really simple. I'll go over that first. If you're a guest, you enter, you check into a table. Nowadays, you grab stickers for all the languages that you speak or sign or that you're learning and stick them on. Before, there were no stickers. It was just you walk in and you go to the table with the flag that sort of, you know, somewhat indicates the language that you want to speak. But as, you know, as I was building it and talking to more and more people, I realized that the flags were not the greatest indicator for, you know, inclusive environments because they're just tied up with ideologies and politics, and they don't really represent always what you think they represent. And so, you know, slowly but surely eliminated all the flags and decided to do the script of the language and the language on these big signs so that you couldn't miss it no matter what level you're at in the language. And that was really something that I learned through just talking to people and hearing their stories about how they came to learn their language and, you know, what their first language means to them or, you know, what their journey has been. I actually recommend to everybody out there, stop asking people where they're from and start asking people what languages they speak, because even though it seems like a benign question to ask where somebody's from, these days it's sort of, in this age of globalism, I should say, it's wrought with all kinds of strange feelings for certain populations. And so you actually get to the root of who somebody is and their personal life journey much quicker if you ask them what languages they speak or sign. Yeah, so you walk in, now you get your stickers so you can rep all your languages. At this point we have, oh my gosh, I think I have 30 language stickers at our flagship events. One of them is Esperanto, which is, you know, this kind of made up language that some people still really like to nerd out over. It was supposed to be a universal language, but didn't really catch on. And every day, you know, we have new languages that are requested. So I just recently talked to someone who was talking about various pidgin languages and how, you know, how they relate to one another. He was specifically talking about Nigerian pidgin. And then we had this amazing conversation just about pidgin languages from all over the world. So, and then there's, you know, Assyrian. There's, you know, somebody who mentioned Assyrian on their ticket. And so I had to do a deep dive of how to say hello in Assyrian and learned, you know, tons about that culture. So each language is sort of, it's just rooted in the DNA of the people who come, whether it's learned, you know, as an adult or when they were young. Yeah. So we have, like I said, we have 30 languages at the moment at Chicago's International Cafe, and more requested every day. And each one is really unique and beautiful in its own right.
Well, and I think what I love about that is they ask it, they request it, right? Mm-hmm. And so you didn't go out there with these are the most popular languages. It really has grown organically on who showed up and who is part of it, which I think is really, I think a lot of event people, and especially in our leadership space, I'll build it and they will come. I'll build a resource group for a group and they will come. No, let the group build the group that's meaningful for them. So that's one thing that I love. But also that move away from the flags, having done quite a bit work of in Latin America, Spanish being maybe one of the languages I was closest to, it is, you know, Argentinian Spanish versus Mexican Spanish versus Spanish, you know, from Spain Spanish, like they're all different, but they have power dynamics related to it. So I remember doing work and having a senior executive from Argentina say that the most racism, that was his word, he'd ever felt was being Argentinian in Mexico and his accent, right? Mm. And so I love that the flags represent something else, but even just putting Spanish together at a table builds bridges in places and ways that outside in the world sometimes can be the barriers to connecting and relationship. And I would say in the U.S., maybe we have the same sorts of feelings. Do you have a New York accent, a Southern accent, mm-hmm. a San Francisco accent, which I do. And most people say, well, you know, there isn't a San Francisco. There is. But, you know, we make stuff up about people, and that bias drives our connection or lack of connection strictly through the words that are coming out of our mouth and how they come out. That's just really cool.
Well, I think it's interesting because it's a lot of, you know, human connection and interactions about intention. So if you come to a conversation and, you know, let's say you're, you know, two people who speak the same language, but from different places, you know, like I'm from Chicago, you know, you're from San Francisco, right? So we come and we sit at the English table, which by the way, is our second biggest table. So totally a great place to hang out for the night. And we get to know each other a little bit. And then we start to sort of like poke fun at each other for the differences in our language. I think the intention of it being to play as opposed to hurt is, I mean, people love that. Like we, you know, people love to be able to, you know, give each other a little bit of a hard time. So having the intention of kindness and of learning and growth, one of the other things that I discovered about these events that is so special is that no matter what languages you're learning or you're, you know, really proficient at, you have the opportunity to be either a learner at a table. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, you can be the fluent one at a table and be like the rock star. And so there's just this nice balance of reciprocation and empathy, because you know, quite literally within 2 minutes of each other, you can have both experiences. And so people come to these events with the intention to let people fumble through their French, you know, which you will be hard pressed to find if you're traveling, you know, to a Francophile country. So it's just, there's just a lot of generosity at these tables that is incredibly inspiring.
Yeah. Oh, I love it so much. And you're building all this, you're doing all this, and you happen to have 2 children and you have a very busy life otherwise. So tell us about your personal life, because you don't sit still in that space either.
Well, you know,
she's making funny faces at me right now, just for listeners.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, again, I blame our mothers, all the Peterson girls. They just are busybodies and instilled it in us somehow. So yeah, no, I mean, I have 2 kids. They're crazy. They're hilarious. I've always wanted to be multilingual. And, you know, this is something my mother wanted for me and for herself. And now I'm like, okay, how do I do it for them? But this is, of course, me, you know, wanting something for them that who knows what they want. But yeah, personal life is wild. My husband and I, and, you know, now our kids are getting roped into it. We love to play board games. We're very social. So finding interesting ways to connect with people is really important for us. And so we're, you know, kind of have this home that is just a whirlwind of activity. But yeah, I don't know. Finding more time just for walks, I think, is something that I would like to do in the near future.
You got to find a sponsoring location within walking distance of your house and you can walk to and from.
That would be awesome.
So part of live stoked, lead stoked is the premise. You got to live stoked before you lead stoked. And you are expanding this beyond. If you had any, you know, as you bring people on, are there any themes or stories or things you tell them as you onboard? Or let's say it's someone who's listening to you that is young, has kids, and would love to do something like this and has no idea to get started. You know, they feel the live stoked, like their life would be stoked if they could, but right now the identity, say, of mom or other identities are getting in the way. There's the live side and the lead stoked. They may be the same answers. That's why I ask both the questions. But how do you onboard people or bring people along in this conversation?
Well, I, you know, one thing that I try to do, because I've gotten myself wrapped up in a lot. One thing I try to think about is taking a step back and just being really grateful for what I already have. So I think that's step number one before you get yourself all mixed up in all these projects, is just really think about how grateful you are for what you've already built and how far you've come, you know, just, you know, through age and time and all of that. So I think that's a really important thing to do. It's not always about racking up projects or, you know, it's not about racking up anything like points. We're not racking up points, really. We just want to live happily and, you know, do well with the relationships that we have and the body that we have, you know. But I do have to say that as a mother of 2, I really wanted to have something that I could do that allowed me to, you know, exercise my creative side. And so figuring out what that thing is that you want to use, that you're compelled to do, and making space for it. I mean, for me, it was, I really, you know, I went and I took action and I started a corporation, you know, I mean, that was crazy. I have no idea what I'm doing, you know, with this entity, but I did it. And every day I laugh at myself, you know, with this idea of you're a CEO, you know, it seems ridiculous, but it's also incredibly thrilling and it propels me to learn every day just to comply even. And there's so much power in things that I didn't know about that I'm forced to learn about as I go. So yeah, I don't know, like open an LLC or a corp and just see what happens, I guess. That'll keep going.
Hell, I need that. I need that. Because it is kind of gnarly. And I think the other thing, and this is clearly implied, this is who you are, but there is a way of being that you have, that you bring into this. And I imagine you tell people along in that spirit of connection and celebration of different cultures, identities, all of it, right? And right now it's through language. But I think you embody in so many ways that inclusion that we seek as a country, as an organization, or as organizations I work at. It's as simply as just listening to what people need. And you've followed that path to provide that safety. And, you know, a little piece that runs through me is, you know, having been on teams where people have English as a second language and the debate is, oh, they should speak English always. And it's like, but that's exhausting, right? Mm-hmm. Like the most inclusive kind thing you can do is create spaces where they can speak their language and let whoever it is do the things that are just relaxing. Because being on, you know, trying to speak a second language, even if you're fluent at it, is just exhausting. And that you can show up and just sit in your language that you might not get to hear, right? And just be nourished by it. Or you get to try. Who knows what it is? I don't know. But I think there's something really important in that you do you. That Matt introduced me to that phrase. I know some woman wrote a book about it, but he empowered me so much. Just you do you. And I think that's, you've built this on that philosophy. And I love that so much.
Well, thank you, Sarah. I, again, don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm hoping to do my best. And the people around do really guide you if you just listen. So just be open to listening and observing and stick with that curious spirit, I think does help.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm landing. You know, I talk about sometimes, I haven't talked a lot on the podcast. I think about it, you know, my business building, and I did a lot of things I was supposed to do. I listened to the thought leaders and they fundamentally didn't work, and they didn't work for me, right? It just wasn't how I was supposed to bring myself in that world. And I think that's really, really important, because where I'm coming to in 2024, which includes this podcast, is doing things just because it's what draws me and fulfills me. And so when it gets hard, I still want to do it. And yeah. I still want to learn about it. And for me, it's social media, you know, being out on social media in ways that feel inauthentic to me. I know I have to be out there and no sell, but I don't care. I will not build this business by doing it the way everyone else does. I've never done my story being very different than yours, but neither one of us have really colored in between the lines in our careers. Right. And, I think that served us. And you know, I wish I knew. I'm just learning that. So I appreciate you sharing that. And, you know, that thing you're compelled to do, for me, it's my photography, right? I have the URLs for my Photoshop inspired by your mom, who just created a shop and started selling her photography. I was like, it's so easy. Like, why am I sitting here freaking out and not doing it? I have all the tools. So I think that's what I want to take away. And for all you listeners, you know, what is that thing you're called to do, and make time for it? Because Jess has two kids, husband, both are active, involved, social life, building a business, not even just doing the events, but doing all the back office. And she's still doing this through the lens of being creative and bringing her creativity out. Don't ignore that. And I, as a person right now that is trying to unravel that role of what it means to be a corporate person or a business or person from that formal place, that adulting place, that place of play and creating space for that, that's where the magic comes from. So from me, that is, you know, I may be ahead of Jesse in years. She is ahead of me miles, centuries in wisdom. And so as someone who's traveling, I just thank you, Sharon. And yes, thank you for laughing. She has the best laugh ever. So.
Stop. You're too nice. What? No.
Well, so, you know, we're related.
So I love you too. I know. I just like, thank you so much for bringing me on your podcast. I've had so much fun listening to, you know, your other interviewees, and yeah, just listening to you grow through this process is thrilling. So
you've seen me through. Thank you, cuz. So here's the thing. Where do people find you, maybe as a person, or International Cafe, if someone's listening going, oh, son of a bitch, I got to have that in my city yesterday. Like,
yes,
how do they find you?
So our official website is intlcafe.io. And if you want to find us on Instagram, it's @ and then the same as the website. So intlcafe.io. Yeah. And you can find me posting on the Instagram. And if you send an email through our, you know, fancy website, it goes straight to my inbox. So please do that. I'll be happy to respond.
It's the many, many sides of Jesse. And then I'm going to close with the final question I love asking. What are you reading, listening to, watching these days that just bring you joy?
Ooh, no, I went on a reading kick, but you know, I can't remember any of the books at the moment. I do love the podcast, How I Built This. That's really something that, you know, for the last few years has just kept me going. And recently I listened to the episode with Adam Grant and I really loved it. I didn't really know much about him before listening to it, but he mentioned in it, he said something about showing up to the party with intention. And I loved that. And it resonated so deeply with me because, and he was talking about being an introvert and showing up to the party with intention to, you know, take the next step beyond just showing up to the party. But it really resonated with me that the people who come to the International Cafe events, that they just show up with the most wonderful intentions and walk away with great things. So that's just a recent podcast listen that I quite enjoyed.
Fantastic. Well, part of my boldness is having the gumption to ask people like the wonderful Susan Hyatt and you and all these people to be on my podcast. Maybe I'll reach out to him and say, hey, you got a shout out. Want to come on my podcast?
Yes, please. He's like lovely. Yeah, totally.
Good. Well, thank you for that. I binge listened to How I Built This or the book. Mm-hmm. On a hike. And I forget the podcast. As a podcast host, I am a very bad podcast listener. So this moment of truth right here, you heard it. The confession happened here at whatever minute of the podcast, but I'll put that on there. So anyway, to everyone else who's listening, all that information will be in the show notes. Thank you for listening. Jesse is one of the family members, but I still have more listeners than family members and friends. That means there's a whole bunch of you listening, which I just marvel at and think is amazing and awesome. So Jesse, thank you so much for telling your story. You inspire me always. I love what you're doing. We'll have to get the rest of the cousins on here, kind of do a family yes. run here as we're going. And to everyone else, we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us for Live Stoked, Lead Stoked. We know you're busy, so it means the world to me that you'd spend this time with us. If you're interested in digging deeper on the topics discussed today, be sure to check out the show notes for resources and links related to this episode. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you found this to be time well spent. Your support helps us immensely. Plus, consider leaving a review. They're like virtual high fives, and I appreciate every one of them. Finally, stay connected with us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot us a message or a question. Your stories and experiences enrich the community we're building here, and you never know, your question may end up on a monthly Ask Me Anything. So until next time, keep subscribing, keep reviewing, and keep living your most stoked life. We'll be back with more inspiration, stories, and insights. See you then.